Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Hello and welcome to the IGN UK podcast. I am Alex and this week I'm joined by Krupa.
Hello.
And Kamali.
Hello.
So we never did get a good sweet name for you. Somebody sent in one like similar to what Tilly said. So Krupa Chups or Krupa Chups.
Krupa Chups.
Krupa Chups kind of works. It's not as good as Tilly Tots or Caramali.
Chupa Krups. Chupa Krups.
Yeah.
It's taken me back to when I was a really fat kid. Like it's a little bit similar to Chubby Krups. I don't want to go back there.
We can have a little story.
The dark days. The dark days, when I had to evaluate doorways before walking through. Get caught.
You weren't that big. I can't believe it.
I was 3.5 stone heavier than I am now.
Really?
Yeah.
What age?
And shorter.
At what age?
Oh, probably from the years of...
Oh!
This takes me back.
I love the way that you're holding the
microphone. Nobody should have stretch marks at 9.
Did you have a baby?
Yeah. You never lose it.
Okay.
Just, the years it took me to shift that. I asked for a C-section. They said, "No, you're not famous enough." I've got no mic stand. This is weird. People who are watching, you usually record with mic stands in place, and I don't have a mic stand because it's broken. So I'm this. I can like lunge.
You're freestyling.
Right.
So we've done a lot of impressions so far.
Hurt myself.
Frank Sinatra and stuff.
Yeah, I feel like a bit of a crooner in Vegas in the 70s.
Anyway,
should we crack on because this is rubbish?
This week's podcast, we are going to talk about the news, obviously. It's also been Tokyo Game Show this week, so we'll talk about our thoughts of what we've seen there. But first, a quick foray into the last 7 days of our lives.
Okay.
Destiny. It's all been about Destiny.
You've been playing Destiny every day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it.
I like it.
I really love it.
Right, first off, Luke. Why are you such a big fan? Because you've kind of followed the game quite closely. Obviously, the MMO aspect appeals to you.
Look, his mouth is wide open in anticipation.
Salivating. He's dilated.
The MMO aspect of it really kind of appeals to me. But also, because I play so many MMOs to try them out, it's just different because the gameplay is fundamentally different. It's a shooter.
Yeah.
I've tried PlanetSide 2 and stuff, but just the aspects and the layer and the way it's kind of put together, very nice. I think it's aesthetically very good. My complaint... I kind of have is the story doesn't really grasp me that much, and there's a weird point.
You mean it's rubbish?
Well, no. So here's the thing. Here's the thing. With World of Warcraft, for example, the story never really grabbed me, and then I got to a stage where I cared enough about the game that I went online and I read some of the lore from the strategy titles, from all of this, and suddenly I was like, oh, that's who this character is.
I guess that's probably going to happen to Destiny over time. Like, how do a lot of MMOs treat story?
It's similar.
Is that a widespread problem for the genre? I'm not au fait with a lot of MMOs. It strikes me as that would be...
So what you have a lot of is you have kind of instant storytelling things, but it depends. So, you know, some of them have gone for full-on voiceovers, like, you know, The Elder Scrolls Online has a lot of voiceover, but that ramps up the budget. You've got Guild Wars 2 that also has voiceovers, and that does it in a really interesting way. But what Destiny kind of does that's really interesting, a lot of people, you know, you fill out those grimoire cards, and it's like, go to Bungie.net, and you can find out more.
I absolutely hate that, because I'm never in a million years going to do that.
You don't go, but I actually was like, I'll go, I'll bite, and I went, and it's actually... It's loads of story about all the races. Like, you unlock it when you kill your first Vex, for example.
Right.
It gives you a story of when the Vex appeared, how they appeared.
Which one's the Vex?
Speculation.
You haven't got there yet.
Like all the Fallen, all the Cabal, and all of this.
All right.
Oh, the Hive. And it gives
spoilers?
Jesus.
God damn it.
It was written about a long time ago. Anyway, basically, it's just quite interesting, and you can pick up the story that way. I think it would be really good, and I'd be surprised if at some stage. I assume they're doing it this way now to drive people to the Bungie.net platform.
Well, I've been there enough to figure out what's going on with my router and its, I don't know, dingleberry problem or whatever it is.
Miranda Centipede. Miranda Centipede's on my router.
We've had a lot of issues.
So weird.
It's that, but I think hopefully at some stage they'll integrate it into the game. But it is, the story once you get that is good. I like the setting. And last night I played a raid, a strike, which is kind of the version of a dungeon in a normal MMO. So
it's
three of you, and the first, and I've done some earlier ones, but I did the ones on Venus this time, and they get really tough. And more than just kind of being a war of attrition against the bosses, tactics start coming into play. So you have to do certain things, you have to know what you're doing, you have to coordinate, and it gets really, really frenetic.
So you probably shouldn't pick three hunters.
Yeah.
Well,
it doesn't actually matter that much.
According to Vince's review, Vince's IGN review is now live. I think we've got one of the most thorough reviews out there, actually, because Vince spent, you know, like a week and a half playing it, and he's got really to the end game, and he's tested all that stuff out, high-end loot, and he really has a very thorough understanding of how that stuff works.
Yeah.
So our review is based up on the experience right until the end. And he says that one of his criticism was that, you know, picking between the Titan, the Warlock, and the Hunter doesn't actually make that much an impact. There's slight differences way late on in the game, but still, even then, there's not really a complementary team system.
So I started as a Hunter, and because we're all Hunters, I thought, right, I'll restart as a Titan. And before I started playing it as a Titan, I'd read that it feels slow, obviously a lot kind of more heavily armoured. It feels very much similar, but it's just obviously different skills. I've still got a sniper rifle. I've still got an assault weapon. Obviously, my
weapons aren't character specific, even you don't add anything. Like, hunters don't add a buff to a sniper rifle. No.
But what is quite interesting,
like,
and so
which
last
is
night,
what I thought.
So I hit level 17 last night, but I started at 14. So I hit 15 last night, and when you hit 15, you unlock your subclass, and that's very different. So.
Right.
That changes.
Oh yeah,
you know,
that's the close combat one, isn't it?
Yeah. But what I did some research because I was like, oh god, I don't want to proceed and lock myself into one. But the great thing is, you don't.
Do you have to make? Oh, you can swap
you
back.
Can swap between.
It's okay.
It's like an equipable bit of equipment. So you swap between. You can only level the one you've got. So to unlock abilities, you have to be playing as it. So I started off doing these strikes with, as the Blade Dancer. With no skills unlocked, so I didn't have my double jump, I didn't have a grenade, I didn't have a throw.
Oh, what, so you have to retrain, as it were?
Yeah.
That's a bit weird.
It's kind of all right, because when you're moving through what we call kind of like trash mobs, which are just kind of grunts, like I was just using them in the Blade Dancer thing, and then I'd jump across to the the other one.
Sure, but I just mean, like, you've worked your way up to a level 15. Something as basic as a double jump doesn't carry over. You suddenly unlearn that skill.
Yeah,
that feels a bit kind of weird to me.
It is. I mean, but I think the point is, so the Blade Dancer one seems a lot deeper, and there's a lot more there. And I think the point is, you know what? You're going to have to start off, and you're going to have to put some time in. But then towards the end, it's going to give you more options.
Right.
The other fantastic thing is you can have them both. So I don't need to start another Hunter. I can level them both fully, get all of the moves. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, it changes it. So obviously, as I say, the Blade Dancer's a lot more melee focused. But no, I'm really loving it. I'm loving my time with it. And the stories, as I say, I love the setting. I think there's a lot of potential there. And I'm kind of trying to fill myself in.
God, he doesn't shut up about it, does he?
I really like it.
Blimey. I think it's all right.
Yeah, good. Me too. It's quite good, isn't it?
What do the two people who have got iPhone 6s think? That's what I want to know.
Yeah.
So
the
let's forget
people
about
who
you
have valid opinions. I don't know.
Just because you're using old technology, you no longer count.
So should we direct everyone towards a very good YouTube clip that you circulated this morning?
Yes.
Do you want to tell everyone what that is?
So I can't remember. I found it on Twitter, and I was on my way in, and I knew that you were at... the shop getting your iPhone 6. Anyway, there's this kid who is at the front of the queue. In Perth in Australia. And obviously there's a mob of kind of journalists there. He comes out with his iPhone 6. They're like, oh, let's see it.
One of the first in the world.
Yep.
because obviously the time difference. He opens the box, slips the top off, and the phone goes straight out and whacks onto the floor.
Oh, my God.
And then, so Avery, everybody in the queue is going like, oh, my God. And then he picks it up. He's like, it's all right. It's all right. It's obviously fine. And then just before it cuts away, he obviously sees a mark. And he's like,
I've been waiting in line 2 weeks.
Oh, my God.
That's too much.
Yeah.
I knew it was bigger. It does feel a lot bigger.
Yeah.
But it's a lot thinner.
You've got yours there. Yeah. That's the 5.
I've got a 5 as well, just before anyone thinks I'm a complete...
But yeah.
Yeah, you've got it in some kind of like weird case.
Basically, my phone got stolen, I got a new one, and then I got it. And this case is so bad, you can't make phone calls, because it doesn't sense it's close to your face. And so...
Oh, why have you still got it on then?
Well, Alex is always like, why did you take the case
off? It's covering up all the sentences, Luke.
But just take it off.
Well, I do for phone calls.
Oh my God.
I've gone through it. This is my third.
The one time when you're actually probably going to drop it.
This is my third one of these in about six months.
Honestly, put the case on before you put it in the pocket, just so in case it slips from the top of the pocket to the bottom of the pocket.
It doesn't get scratched by my keys.
So
you put it in a different pocket.
Different pocket.
Right, there you go, solution.
I've got work keys and I've got...
Well, keep your keys. It doesn't matter if you scratch your keys on keys, does it?
You can double key.
But then I've got everything in one pocket.
Honestly, your opinions no longer count. That is it. Right.
You're making problems for yourself here.
Anyway, the one thing that the iPhone and 4G is really good for is when the Wi-Fi breaks in the office. I've managed to tether Destiny through that.
We've been playing Destiny on 4G.
It works a treat.
Better than our Wi-Fi. Yeah.
Anyway, let's move on to this week's news and Microsoft chucking their money around like nobody's business.
Oh, God, no, I need the brick. So, Microsoft, after much speculation, have finally confirmed that it's bought Mojang, who make Minecraft.
$2.5 billion.
Yes, which is a lot of money.
It is a lot of money.
I believe it is.
So Marvel was $4 billion.
Marvel was $4 billion. Twitch was Twitch was just under two, wasn't it? Or was it one? It was one.
Yeah.
Oculus was two.
Yeah. And Oculus is actually relevant for another reason. But we'll come back to it. So it's in the grand scheme of things. It's
what would you buy?
Lucasfilm was like 2.5.
Yeah, I think Lucasfilm might be.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah, so then...
There you go. So Disney buys Lucasfilm for $4.05 billion.
Okay.
Microsoft for Mojang, $2.5 billion. Facebook buying Oculus was $2 billion. And Amazon bought Twitch for $1 billion.
Okay.
Which out of them would you have splashed your cash on?
I said the thing about...
Lucasfilm.
Marvel.
Marvel $4 billion.
I was going to say Marvel, but what did you get for that? Obviously, you got the brand, but did you have... Like, Disney basically built it into what it is, right? The films?
What's this?
Marvel.
Marvel Studios was already up and running, making their own stuff when they were acquired.
Okay, at what point was it?
Oh, God. I think it was before Avengers, I think.
Okay.
I mean, let's have a double check on that.
Because I was thinking that, like, I know $1.5 billion more is still quite a lot of money, but it made me think that, God, that is a lot of cash.
Yeah.
Especially because, you know, I don't know what the saturation rate is on Minecraft, but I should imagine it's quite high.
So my thing is, so everyone's been saying this, because a press release followed out sent to investors said, don't panic, we're going to get the money back within a year, by the end of the financial year.
$2.5 billion
exactly.
In a year.
Now, the point that everyone's made is, I think, and I might be pulling this figure out of the air, but I think Mojang was saying, you know, they made something like $100 million in a year, which
right.
is a lot. But it's obviously a lot short.
Yeah.
The main thing is, you know, I would say it's kind of hitting saturation point. Having said that, people keep buying Minecraft, but it's the licensing. That's where it's at. Because I went on holiday the other day and walking through the bookshop, and like number 4 in the bestsellers list is, you know, 100 of the best things to see in Minecraft.
Sure, I get that. You know? But if you look at the licensing options for Marvel, like that's way, way bigger.
Minecraft. Disney acquired Marvel in 2009, but it didn't start distributing its films until, obviously it would have taken a cut, until The Avengers.
Right, so that was the first film that was under the kind
of
Disney
2012.
Marvel
banner. You say like, obviously Minecraft's out there, it's been, you know, sold by, you know, its install base is huge and there's a big opportunity in licensing. But that install base, you can make money off them all the time. Just release updates, new stuff, new content.
Have they done that though?
There's like packs and stuff for like
Mass Effect kind of skins and
stuff.
And they charge for that.
I believe they do, yeah.
Right, okay.
So like it's small transactions, but if you've got millions and million people.
Sure.
So I mean the big theory is that what they're going to do is they're going to give Xbox exclusivity or timed exclusivity on some patches. And then what they're going to do is roll out, you know, like either Halo things or just, you know, exclusive things for Xbox.
See, that's a weird thing. Like, I understand why they would do, like, make it have a timed exclusive on Xbox. But at the same time,
you want to
put it out as far and wide as possible.
Well, I think
they
will. Like, Xbox is already... was already the kind of preferred console anyway, which paved the way for this deal to happen anyway, you know, in the first place.
It's been quite interesting to see people kind of speculating about what this means, because they've said they're still going to support all the other versions. So PlayStation versions, in theory, the Vita version is still coming out at some stage. We don't know when. But it's interesting because it very much seems the onus is now on Sony. How comfortable is Sony with having Microsoft owning a very, very profitable and successful property that's on its console?
If it makes them money, it doesn't really matter.
I don't think it's as suspect. You know, it happens in other forms of business. Like, if you ever watch a lot of TV programmes at the end on BBC or vice versa on ITV, at the end it'll say on BBC an ITV production.
ITV
makes stuff for BBC, and I'm not sure if the other way around. I don't think it goes the other way.
No.
But it does happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the only other thing that came out of that, obviously, is so the other news is Notch and the two other co-founders are stepping.
He's done a cream bunner.
They have. It's interesting. So he wrote quite a passionate blog piece, and he's saying, you know, and basically the concluding line was, it's not about money, it's about my sanity. Mm. I think it's very easy to say that when you're walking away with a lot of money. But it's true, he has been, you know, he was a small developer, kind of quite reclusive and quite shy, and he's been now being held aloft as a great bastion of
different
thing. But he's also come under a bit of fire because obviously he pulled Minecraft for Oculus once Facebook bought them. Something I don't like about Facebook, don't like this whole corporate culture and he's now done the same thing. But
I think we were saying it, if he was staying there, then that would have kind of smacked of hypocrisy, and there is definitely a whiff rather than a smack.
Good, that's
is that different levels of hypocrisy?
I'll go with that.
But I think, ultimately, yeah, he set out with a tiny group making a game, and I could never have predicted its success.
No. Outrageous.
And, you know, I think, you know, some people like are comfortable being in the limelight, other people aren't. And if I was given $2.5 billion, I'd probably just get on top of all the money he's already worth. So fair play to him. And he can basically do whatever the heck he wants now for the rest of his life.
And you know what he said, again in this letter, he's like, I'm going to continue to make games, small games, but the second any of you start, like, it starts...
any of you.
I'm done, I'm gone again.
Any of you lot, if you come around here...
He's like, any traction and I'm gone.
Yeah, but he wasn't like, any of you.
Any of you lot giving me any of that? I'll tell you what.
Money.
Yeah. Anyway.
Sheds. So, yeah.
There you go. February.
February.
February's the new November.
I cannot wait.
February's the new November.
Everything's coming out in February or March or November.
It's
Bloodborne.
My birthday in February.
Well, there you go. Shall I buy you a copy of this?
Yes.
So, Bloodborne, one of the games I'm most looking forward to in 2015, now has an official Western release date. It's coming out on February 6th.
And is that the same as the Japanese launch day?
I thought that was the 5th.
Well, all right. A day difference. I'm being near as damn it.
Well,
you're being thorough.
I'm being thorough.
Good.
Being exact and a pedant. So it's coming out, and they've announced a collector's edition. It's not like a huge collector's edition that has like a monster in it or a scythe. No.
That was like Dark Souls 2, wasn't it? The Japanese version. You got lots of little
mini
miniature weapons.
I like
to stab cats. I don't know.
Oh God!
Don't stab cats.
No, jeez.
It's kind of standard stuff, art book, steel case. Do people prefer steel books? Can I just put that question out there? They look nice, but...
Somebody I was talking to a couple of weeks ago, he collected the steel book editions of stuff, so people do like it.
I wouldn't say no to one.
I think I would say. I'm trying to think of what I have had a steel
book. You wouldn't say no to one.
Do you want a steel book? I was like, yeah.
Sure. High praise indeed.
Yeah, I wouldn't say no to it.
What have you got steel book edition of?
I've got a Resident Evil 6.
Black Ops 2.
I think I've got Elder Scrolls Online.
Destiny.
Yeah.
Mass Effect 2.
Yeah, so if you want to write in and tell us what steelbooks are in your collection, IGN underscore...
You gave feedback.
Band of Brothers.
It's not as if David's got com IGN.com.
Yeah.
Don't lift up the curtain and reveal...
the curtain.
Oh, no, you've revealed...
Wizard of Oz.
You revealed the corporate monster. Anyway, so that's what's coming out, and we're going to talk more about Bloodborne and the cool trailer it got at TGS later on in the show.
Yes. But in the meantime, the feud between Zack Snyder and J.J. Abrams is hotting up. I wouldn't say a feud. It's more like kind of friendly banter.
It's bant.
I've done this wrong. I was just going to say really quickly, Bloodborne release date, a similar aesthetic to The Order 1886 and also a PlayStation exclusive, which is also due in February. Do we think The Order 1886 might move?
I don't know. No. But we're halfway through the next news story.
No, that's fine. Sorry.
Right.
We're freewheeling.
We could talk. Why don't talk about that in the talking point section?
Well, there you go. So, going back to my original point, so it started off as... what was the first thing, actually? I know I should prepare this.
Wasn't Henry Cavill as a...
So, yeah, there's a Superman dressed up as a dark Jedi Sith. Thank you.
Oh, I was off mic then.
And then it was followed up with Batman with R2-D2 on Tatooine. And then the most recent picture, the one that's kind of done the rounds a lot in the last week, is Gotham PD shoving a stormtrooper into a police interceptor. But I think Abrams has come back with probably the best response.
He's brought it, hasn't he?
He has. He absolutely has. So before this, he did C-3PO as the Caped Crusader, which I think was... they should make the film rather than doing all of this kind of stuff.
Well, no wonder it's coming out the year after next. Schneider, deep work.
I like the C-3PO one, because obviously he's wearing kind of the cow thing, and rather than the bat symbol, it's the Rebel Alliance logo in the sky. But anyway, this one was a video rather than an image, and it's a panning shot, our first glimpse of the new Millennium Falcon, which looks kind of a lot like the old Millennium Falcon.
bit rustier.
But then after a few seconds, it zooms in and reveals a tiny little Batmobile inside one of the kind of exhaust ports or whatever
it's dwarfed.
It is.
Isn't it?
So, which bat is it? The Tumbler?
Is the Tumbler before Tumble? before it's in the stealth material?
Right.
So when he says, "Does it come in black?"
Oh, I just assumed it was because it was the same colour as the Millennium Falcon.
Oh, was it? I didn't know. Oh, maybe it is. I just assumed it was because it looked kind of like the mottled camouflage version.
Yeah.
Do you think people at Disney and Fox are just looking at Disney? You're just going, Disney and Warner going, guys, seriously, you're behind schedule.
Yeah, but at the same time, it builds a lot of excitement, I think.
Yeah, they're probably there going, it is good bants, though.
Yeah. I'm sure some of the top execs in Hollywood are saying.
It's like Roy Eisner. I don't know if he's there anymore, but it's like, this is quality bants. Keep going, JJ. And JJ's just like dropping the megaphone. That's what directors have, megaphones, and he's dropping it.
Do they still have megaphones?
Yeah.
Do they still?
He's an eccentric.
Okay, right.
It's not an electric one, it's just one of the old ones.
Like a bullhorn or something.
Analog.
I don't know. Has it got one of those buttons where you press it, does like a police siren?
Oh, I like them.
Those. Yeah. Probably not on a film set.
No.
Probably.
Unless there's an emergency. There's a fire. Anyway, what do you think of the Millennium Falcon? Apart from the fact it looks like the Millennium
Falcon.
Just in general?
Yeah. It looked very much like hamburger and olive. That was how it was inspired, wasn't it?
What's the olive?
Like the bit on the side. Or was it a pickle?
I was going to say, the cockpit does not look like an olive.
Maybe it was a pickle or something. That's the original design. Okay. So it looked much like that, I thought.
Right.
No, I thought it looked nice. Because I wasn't sure whether it was a model or a CGI. I thought it was maybe a CGI render and they've just controlled the camera to fly through
it. You've seen the leaked images of the kind of half-built Millennium Falcon.
It just looks so detailed.
Somewhere in like the
it just
UK.
Looks so, yeah, it just looks so detailed and polished. Yeah. And a lot of that stuff on set, while high quality... You can't get that close to it. I just thought maybe it was a CGI render and that's how they were able to turn it around quickly.
Either way,
anyway,
it looked that good.
I cannot wait. It looked massive as well.
Yeah.
They've made it bigger.
Yeah, but what, the Millennium Falcon?
It feels bigger because if you go back to the original films, there aren't that many shots of them in frame with it. There's the shots where they run into it in the Death Star. I don't think it's not as big as that.
No, but you've got the bit...
But they're implying it.
Where it's in Mos Eisley and obviously... That scene, it's so bad.
I preferred the fat Henry VIII man.
Yeah, exactly. I was talking about this recently because I went back and watched the Blu-rays.
Of all of them, or the old ones, of
the original trilogy, but obviously it's the extended editions or whatever they're called. I can't remember what he called them now. But that The addition of that scene is so bad, and on Blu-ray it looks really, really crappy.
It's when his like eyes like pop out of his head.
Yeah. But it's just Han Solo, the way he kind of goes, bup, 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 bup. That's him going up and over his tail. Yeah. But it just looks... the steps aren't there. Because he was just a fat guy in the original thing.
Tail.
He looked... Yeah, it was a fat guy with a big beard.
He was Henry VIII. Henry VIII.
I don't think he was Henry VIII, but he looked a bit like...
Maybe an awful thing to say. I don't know if I ever saw the original originals.
Well, it wasn't in the original. It's a deleted scene.
It's a deleted scene, which he put back in.
The thing, yeah. See, I think I've seen the version where it wasn't Fat Man and Henry VIII,
but it was only an extra on the kind of DVDs stuff like that.
Don't digitally touch him up.
Anyway, if you had to pick one film, Star Wars, Batman vs. Superman, which one?
Star Wars, no question.
Batman vs. Superman.
You idiot. You don't even mean that.
No, it's Star Wars, but I will enjoy to see what the hell that movie's going to be. Obviously, it's a huge movie. I've got a peculiar fascination with Batman versus Superman because there is so much in there. I am basically resigned to the fact that I'm going to be in that cinema for 4.5 hours.
Well, I don't think he's going to be able to tell a story in any less.
Somebody's going to have to amputate my butt cheeks because I'll be like passing out. But I'll enjoy it.
I like the time when long films had intervals. Oh, I used to like that.
Like Gone with the Wind. Oh, I remember seeing that in the 1930s.
JFK. When I saw that, that had an interval.
What, him getting shot?
I can't remember. I've only ever seen it once.
It's an amazing speech at the end when Kevin Costner gives that speech and he talks about his fallen king.
Right.
He's like, never forget your dying king. And he does this thing where he kind of like gets choked up. Yeah. And you're like, wow, that's good acting.
That's like Tom Hanks at the end of Captain Phillips.
Yeah, that's all you have to... Oh, that's an amazing performance. That's a great film.
Yeah.
Paul Greengrass is...
That was
business.
Probably, did that come out this year or last year?
Last year.
That was probably one of my best films of one of the best films I've seen
Oscar
recently.
Year or whatever, last
really,
year.
Really good.
Yeah, and on the side note, we're not covering it in the news, but Paul Greengrass and Jason, taking back on Jason Bourne.
Exciting
with Matt Damon. Are two of the best action films, and the first one's great as well, but some of the smartest, most interesting action films of the last 10 years.
Well, like, gonna be in
it. No.
Nah. Binned him off.
Yeah. I didn't even bother seeing that film.
You know what? They probably look back on it and it's probably a smart business decision, as in you keep the franchise and the name out there. Ticking over.
Yeah.
While you prepare the next thing.
Yeah. Anyway, that's exciting. Last piece of news.
This is exciting.
And it's on the topic of films.
Yeah, another film that's actually going to happen. The long-awaited, much-anticipated Deadpool movie has got a release date. Fox have announced that it's coming out on February 12th, 2016. Now, obviously, Deadpool appeared and was played by Ryan Reynolds in Wolverine X-Men Origins a good few years back. I think everyone agrees that they kind of bastardized the character to a great extent, and it kind of put a nail in the coffin of a Deadpool movie ever happening. Despite Ryan Reynolds wanting it to happen, of course he did. He has nothing else to do. I really like Ryan Reynolds. Went through a really bad. He was all set to be the biggest star in the world, Ryan Reynolds, and he kind of touched it, and then this didn't work out. Green Lantern flopped, unfortunately. I think he's really good in Green Lantern. It's the rest of the stuff that's not so good. And I think if you compare it to Chris Pratt's career, Chris Pratt is at a similar turning point.
Yeah.
And he's just landed it. Like, Guardians of the Galaxy was a big tick, whereas Green Lantern flopped.
Yeah.
Next year, he's in Jurassic World, and he's going to go stratospheric.
Yeah.
Whereas Ryan Reynolds has kind of just held course.
I like Just Friends. Tilly agrees with me on this, but Just Friends remains a very funny film.
The problem with Ryan Reynolds is his eyes too close together.
Yeah, he's, you know what? He is a bit of a minger.
Hang on, no, aren't you the one who says that he's not an attractive man?
Well, his eyes are too close together.
He said this before, and it's...
They are.
I would.
He's such an attractive man.
Yeah, I would.
Yeah, but I'd be looking at him. My eyes would be looking at either side of his eyes, because they're like that.
He's such an attractive man.
Luke knows all that. Maybe that's why Luke likes
Get him to put the Deadpool mask
on.
I don't have tiny eyes.
You did that 2 weeks ago.
You can get him to put the Deadpool mask on while he holds you.
So that test footage you showed me.
Right, so that test footage which got leaked kind of around Comic-Con time.
Which looked amazing.
Which looked great. It was Ryan Reynolds doing the mocap, the voice. And maybe that's been a factor in them greenlighting this movie. Because, you know, they were really proud of that footage. It's got out there in the public. People have received it so warmly, got really enthused, and, like, you know, have expressed sadness that the movie never happened. I think Fox probably gave some of that. I don't think that would have been the only factor.
So my only concern is that test footage... it's not like that, and they dumb it down or they make it acceptable for a lower age rating.
Hopefully, the one good thing that can come out of the failure of Deadpool and Wolverine is saying, if you're going to do this character, you need to do it the way it is in the comics. Otherwise, what is the point?
Absolutely.
And it's the potential for them, you know, why I think superhero movies are kind of sustaining themselves at the minute is they've stopped being, quote unquote, superhero movies. They're exploring different types of story, different types of genre. Winter Soldier is a political espionage thriller. Guardians of the Galaxy is, you know, it's a sci-fi comedy film. And this could be a really smart, self-referential comedy if they wanted it to be. It could be really foul-mouthed. It could be really violent. And that's how it will work and find an audience, I think.
Exactly. Finding out its niche.
And, you know... I hope he comes back.
Because
I really want Ryan Reynolds. You know, I think he has the potential to be a great star. And he nails that role.
You can't see his eyes in the film, which is good, right?
Yeah, it's good. In the first part of the film, he's really funny as well as Wade Wilson before they make him mute. Why the hell did they do that? Anyway. So, there you go.
There you go. That's it for this week's news. So, this week it was the Tokyo Game Show. So, a lot of our American chums are over in Japan. In fact, they experienced like quite a heavy earthquake over there.
Yeah. But they're used to it. They're from San Francisco.
I know, but I don't think seasons. It happens all the time, does it?
I once experienced it. I don't want to freak the American guys out, but I want to tell them a story about something I experienced once. I was once in the food court in the Arundel Centre in Manchester, and I was eating a sandwich, and there was a slight tremor.
Wow. What happened? He had a chili.
Oh, meatball marinara. There was a slight tremor because we were in like a suspended area. It was kind of amplified.
Right.
It was a bit scary. But also, I was in Manchester, which has a history of IRA bombings. So everyone was like freaking out that something like that had happened. But it turned out it was a small earthquake.
Been in an earthquake.
Britain's really safe.
So I was in.
It kept a bit of flooding.
I can't remember if it was LA or San Francisco, but it happened. It must have been LA, I think, because I was there with my missus. And I woke up one night and it was just like, what the hell was that? And it had gone before it kind of even started. But yeah, it's a weird feeling.
It's the weird thing about living in the UK. You live a very safe life, really. We have nothing that can animal-wise that can really kill you.
Cattle, maybe, if they stampede you.
Yeah, but that's your own. Like you bring that upon yourself.
Yeah.
You're always going cow tipping.
There you go.
Stampeding cow, yeah. It doesn't really happen. Does it?
Yeah. Cows are dangerous. People
when they're not laughing, they're stampeding.
Amazing. Anyway, Tokyo Game Show,
Yes.
So,
we've actually got a game here that we're kind of each championing.
Championing.
Yeah, so I guess the highlight of the show that I've seen so far is... Yes. Speaking from myself, as I often do. Is obviously Metal Gear Solid. So we've seen the same kind of demo now over and over again.
Yeah, and the base building as well, we've seen a couple of times. We've
seen a lot of it.
And the box.
So this is the first time that they showed a different environment, so kind of much more kind of Snake Eater, jungle environment. Showed off a bit more of Quiet, the sniper rifle lady, who, I don't know, I thought, I got it in my head that she was somebody who
you fight against,
but obviously she's not. Maybe that happens further down the line, I don't know. But it was a 20-minute demo that we've got up on IGN, and man, I'm excited by the Phantom Pain.
Okay, so what excites you so much about this particular demo?
Well, so the open worldness of Ground Zeroes, I really, really enjoyed, because it's the first time, like a lot of stealth games previous to that, you had to play them in a very certain way, a specific way to kind of get the most out of it. Whereas you're a lot freer in Ground Zeroes.
I think Ground Zeroes, and you know, I used to hate when some people make out that it's a demo.
Yeah.
And that's like people I don't think have really committed to it or really given it the time of day.
Yeah.
It felt like a genuine stealth experience.
Yeah.
Whereas I think a lot of the games that I played that were quote-unquote stealth games growing up on PS, original PlayStation, PS2 and so on,
yeah.
they were trial and error games.
Yeah.
When it went wrong, it descended into some kind of Benny Hill farce.
Yeah.
Where you just run around and just let yourself get killed.
Yeah.
And then you do it another way. And then you kind of wait to like find the path where you could be a badass.
Yeah.
Whereas I think all the time in Ground Zeroes, you felt like a badass.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the key is, it's like if you set the alarm off or you're spotted or this, that and the other, you've got so many options to kind of get out of there. And, you know, reset and run around away and do whatever you want. And I think that was illustrated even more in this demo with the kind of the decoys, which, again, I know some people hate it, but it doesn't take itself too seriously. Like, you know, the kind of inflatable rubber decoys, just even the bit where he's climbing up and then the camera pauses on his boots to sort of show off they're made by Puma. They've made a big deal that they've got this stuff with Puma. And they're making some comment in Japanese, but it's just funny. It's lighthearted.
Yeah, I think Kojima does that really well. There's like this farce and this humor and satire.
Yeah.
And there's great seriousness in his games.
Yeah.
I think some people, I think when he makes the serious points, they find it flippant. But I think he just embraces that video games can accommodate both tones.
Yeah.
Also, that game looks outrageously good.
It does look exceptionally
good. It looks amazingly beautiful.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we were saying about Destiny, you know, story's not all that, but the mechanics are, you know, exactly spot on. And you can just see that this is what this game's going to be like. And, you know, I don't know how much control you've got over Quiet. I assume that you kind of like issue orders to her or however it works. But the bit where they take out the helicopter and he throws the grenade in the air and then she snipes it and the grenade hits the helicopter, it's like, that is proper.
That is proper, I think you'll find. Can you do the review for it?
Yeah.
Just like, just that's go, it. Right, Metal Gear 5, Phantom Pain, it's proper, right?
Well, the last two trailers, we've seen a helicopter being taken out by putting C4 on its fuel tank and then strapping the Fulton so it goes up in the air and blows up. And then this time it's the grenade sniped midair. So it. Oh,
Alex,
come on!
Alex, don't forget the horse can do a whoopsie.
Absolutely.
What do you want?
Curl one off and like.
That's as soon as that game comes out, I'm retiring. That's it. I'm going to sit there and play.
This is me now.
Playing Phantom
this is,
Pain for
this
the rest
is me
of my
for the next
life.
30 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
What are you going to follow up that with?
Yeah. All right, Kamali. Yours is Mario Kart 8, isn't it?
It is. I never talk about Final Fantasy, and so I thought I'd give it a go for once. Final Fantasy 15, and also Type Zero.
So it's a driving game, right?
Well, it looks that way.
It's got the Mercedes-Benz DLC.
So the first thing, just the fact that it's even been shown is huge, because we're waiting for it again.
Well, surely it was going to come out at some point.
It's like under a veil.
Look, 2006 this game was announced.
Yep.
And like, it's just, and then they were like, oh, we've rebranded it, and...
Do you want to see it? Can't see it. You can't see it.
You can't. You're not going to know anything. And so E3 and Gamescom this year, we were expecting things.
Yeah.
Nothing. And people had almost given up hope of TGS, ever seeing it at TGS. They gave a new trailer. So first of all, one of the most encouraging things is the news that Final Fantasy Type-0 is going to have a demo of it.
Yeah.
Which suggests that we might actually be getting to a stage where it's playable, and it could possibly come out at some stage... in time.
You know, games, I'm a big fan of the short release window, announcements release.
Sure.
Yeah. Forza, bang and bang, it's out next week, is it? And Bloodborne, that was announced not so long ago, and it's coming out in February.
Well, I mean, their traditional thing has always been they kind of announce it. They announce the next one before the other one, the previous one.
That's their problem. They're announcing a game before they've even started.
They have, they have so many different teams. So the other news that came out about this, which is quite interesting, is Tetsuya Nomura, who was the game director on that, he's now left the project.
Is he doing Kingdom Hearts?
He is, yeah. And so when I interviewed Nomura, he said, you know, it's actually quite a problem because he's like, I can't game direct the two at the same time. So at the moment, I'm prioritizing 15, but obviously that necessitates a knock on Kingdom Hearts.
Because when did they announce Kingdom Hearts?
So Kingdom Hearts was one of the
2 years ago?
E3, wasn't it? It was a trailer from E3,
that wasn't
not last
no,
year.
Yeah, the year before. Yeah.
And basically, I think what's happened is he's probably got the game in a position. So the guy who came on, there's a guy called Tabata, and he's done some of the mobile titles and other titles.
He's
before.
Up to batter.
And he's stepping up to batter, and he's that's really good. And then he's been co-directing since the end of last year, and so I imagine that time has just been him handing over the reins.
Right.
But the trailer looks good. We were talking about it earlier, so you're not usually into this kind of thing, but it looks.
I have no idea what's going on in it apart from. It cuts between some people fighting and then people having a little joyride.
Yeah, the car bit I'm not quite sure about. Usually you move around in these games using chocobos, which are the big yellow birds.
I call them chocobos.
Okay. Well.
But yeah, I know what a chocobo is. Thank you very much.
It's not worked in the games industry for 25 years well, to be called Mr. Thank you very much. There's this character called Mario.
Maybe willingly avoiding it, but. Anyway.
All right, he's called Link, not Zelda.
I'm wondering if they're going to call the car like the chocobo model or something.
Oh. I really hope they
I hope
it.
Not.
And I have no attachment to Final Fantasy, but if they do that...
I'm just wondering. But the thing that kind of got us me interested was the way the group combat seems to be working.
Mm.
It doesn't look like you're necessarily in control of the other characters, but I've seen you can kind of... but you do have all their bars and their health bars, so I don't know how that works.
So I don't remember seeing a bit in there where they throw a grenade in the air and someone snipes it into a helicopter,
right,
though.
You do so a bit where someone throws a sword and then magically teleports and grabs it.
I did see a bit where somebody hacked at the leg of this poor four-legged little thing.
It was
and it rolled over and it was like...
Mm. It's supposed to have blown up a helicopter.
It's like, because you hate cows and then you hate this... Cows. Maybe that's what it is, yeah.
But did you... I don't know, I think it looks quite good. I'm thinking the fact that we've got a demo coming next year... means we're probably not looking at anything before 2016 release, which is annoying, because it'll have been 10 years then.
So I thought it looked interesting. I was just so confused by the car stuff.
Yeah. It's one of these things, because bear in mind we haven't gone hands-on. I'm assuming that by E3 Gamescom next year, we'll have had the demo, we'll have some more hands-on stuff, and then we'll be building towards release.
Because there was a bit, what looked like in-game of you driving the car as well.
Yeah. So it looks, but something that you commented on as well, there's like that brief frame... Of the woman who's like, just sitting there.
Yeah.
That, like, the trailers.
Yeah, but Square has always been,
like,
exceptional at doing that kind of stuff.
Department. So, no, I think it's exciting. As much as anything, it's good to see it, but it is a bit annoying that we still don't even have a release date because, at the end of the trailer, it flashed up in development.
So, what will come up first? Phantom Pain or that?
We don't have a release for Phantom Pain.
I know. I do know that. That's why I was asking the question.
Well, I know, I was just checking because I'm. So much going on in here,
I think they're both games that... Actually, before I'd seen the TGS stuff, I was a bit like, okay, I've seen the same bit of this game quite a lot. I'm hopeful that we'll have a Christmas release for Phantom Pain next year.
I think we're probably looking at... They do like their February-March release windows, does Square. So
they do.
I think they do. I think February-March 2016.
Okay. Have you got anything in February?
Yes.
You do.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. You bit. Okay, so there's this game called Bloodborne. We haven't talked about it yet.
No.
They showed a new trailer.
Yeah.
Lots of new trailers coming thick and fast for Bloodborne. They've got a new one at Gamescom, now a new one at TGS.
Yeah.
I think the one at TGS gives you... The previous trailers have been centered on the same kind of areas. There's a few more varied environments, including this trailer. There's like where you're walking along a kind of pathway or a bridge, and there's lots of fire beneath you. There's a bit in a forest. But I think the thing I liked most about this trailer, one was the atmosphere.
Yep.
It's like, it looks really rich and dense and atmospheric, gothic, oppressive. Also, sounds weird. It looks like the game smells. There's something...
I was not expecting you to say
there
that.
There you go. But you can almost... Because I've played it a bit. It feels like you're... It's like a stench to the world.
Like
it
feels boy's bedroom.
It's a diseased world, Yharnam, and that's the whole like point of the story. Is
the
you're going to this
body odor and masturbation.
You're going to this diseased city to find a cure for this presumably blood-based disease, and it just looks like the whole thing. I'm sorry.
I said it's born in blood. It's a carrier.
Cool. Thank you. The thing I like most about this trailer, though, was you saw more of the creatures that you'll be fighting. And the thing that From do that is exceptional is character and creature design. And it's very famous. If you read any interviews with Miyazaki, what he asks and demands of his designers is that a monster isn't just a monster. It has a monster with a reason.
Yeah.
And there's a rationale to why it looks the way it does. There's a very famous story when someone was designing a dead dragon for Dark Souls. And they drew it as like what you'd expect. So it was like maggot-ridden, like a dead dragon. And Miyazaki, this isn't verbatim, but he said something like, this doesn't have any of the grace or the magnificence that a dragon would have. These are great ancient creatures, and you made it look disgusting. And it's kind of reminds me of what H.R. Giger said about what they did with his designs in later films. He's another guy who really got how to design a monster.
Yeah.
And he said in later movies, they turn him into these brown, slimy creatures that look like turds.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not like the beautiful thing I designed.
And did he actually say that?
Yeah, something. Okay. Yeah, because particularly the beginning of Alien Resurrection,
sure.
Like,
yeah, yeah,
the
yeah,
slimy
yeah.
and the horrible. Yeah. And he built a very sleek, mechanical creature.
Yeah.
So I think that's what I really like about From's games, and particularly the first Dark Souls, was that it's people finding a beauty in designing monsters.
Yeah.
Which is really cool.
Yeah, it's like a lot of it kind of reminds me of like Del Toro and the kind of
Del
the way
Toro's
that
a great touch point, like Pan's
yeah.
Labyrinth.
Yeah,
there's a kind of weird story to be inferred by yeah. studying them.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
you look at some of these creatures, as was the case with Dark Souls, and they haven't just been created because they look cool. That's one of the reasons, but they belong to the area of the world you find them in.
Yeah,
they. It for feels instance, like organic. There's an area in Dark Souls called Izalith.
Yeah.
And when you get there, it's all gone crazy. There's like fire everywhere. There's demons everywhere. And if you delve into the story, you realize that centuries ago, something terrible happened here.
Mm-hmm.
And all these people have been like infected and these demons have come from somewhere else. So there's a story there. They're not just like, hey, it'd be cool to drop this
yeah,
crow
yeah.
creature on this bridge.
Yeah.
There'll be a reason for why it lives there, yeah. which I think is like great. And that's the stuff I really like digging around with and exploring.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of just looking at the trailers there, something that never really, as you say, the monster designs in Dark Souls are fantastic, but for me there's quite a lot of brown and it's almost like sepia in tone in a lot of places, whereas I don't know
in Blood Dark Souls yeah,
yeah. Whereas Bloodborne is a bit more blues and blacks and dark.
Dark Souls is very much like that early on and the thing is Dark Souls, I don't think a lot of people have seen the other areas in Dark Souls because obviously they're much later on and you have to get over the hump.
Yeah.
But there's loads of weird stuff in Dark Souls that people never know about, like there's crystal caves and there's lava worlds and there's like loads of weird stuff in Dark Souls that people never get around seeing because they're just put off. There's like forests and lakes and all crazy stuff.
Yeah. I think like, so the last time I actually saw it, I didn't get the chance to see it at Gamescom. I saw it at E3. It looks way better than it did.
Yeah.
What's
it's
that
really
even, like 2 months
game.
Ago, 3 months ago.
Because I think From is actually quite a small team compared to a lot of developers out there. And that's probably one of the reasons why they're able to make the types of games that they do.
Yeah.
But I think with Dark Souls, while the art direction is brilliant, the actual technical execution probably isn't all that.
Yeah.
Like, notoriously, if you went down in certain areas, you had frame rate issues and the textures aren't the highest res because small team.
Yeah.
The actual design of stuff is brilliant.
Yeah.
So I think with Bloodborne, you've finally got a game where it's as beautiful as the art direction is strong.
Yeah.
Really cool when you're like killing stuff. There's blood everywhere.
Yeah.
So I think blood's important for the story of the game.
Yeah.
Because Dark Souls isn't particularly gory, but Bloodborne is. So I think that's been an intentional design decision. But when you're like covered in blood and you've got like this leather tunic, it kind of like accumulates and shines in the moonlight. It just looks a really nice, like beautiful game, even though it's really twisted.
So I think this time last year, when Tokyo Game Show was drawing to a close, we were all of the opinion that it's a bit like, what is the point anymore? But I think, certainly this year, it feels like there's some good stuff. Not so much news, although obviously showing that trailer was for Final Fantasy is kind of new and exciting. But I think, you know, it's good to see, you know, Japan kind of reaffirming itself as like one of the key kind of development places
in
the UK.
Gamescom
in the world,
becoming a bigger platform as well.
Yeah.
I think it's probably just games are getting bigger. Like, maybe TGS will never scale the heights it once was at. Probably that's obvious that won't happen. But it also is great that other types of announcements can be made there.
Yeah.
That you've got that different outlet, which is still interest to us and probably the people listening to this podcast.
Yeah.
But maybe you can lead with at E3 when the eyes of the mass media
of course.
Are on Los Angeles and the industry.
So they were our picks from Tokyo Game Show this year. Let us know yours. IGN UK_feedback@IGN.com
IGN underscore UK feedback at IGN.com.
There you go. Thank you, Luke. Let's move on to reader feedback. Who's got the first piece? Not me.
I've got the first piece. This is from Jason Tilling. Hey, Jason. Thanks for writing in. He's been a long-time listener. This is the first time he's ever written into the podcast. Thank you for taking the time to do
that. Thank you.
Quite a few episodes back now, we briefly mentioned the TV show Hannibal and promised to discuss this once season 2 had finished, so not to give any spoilers away. I wanted to ask your views on the show and if you think it's an underrated series. So
I mean,
I'm the only one who's seen it, I think.
Say,
but again, I don't really want to discuss it at length, but all right, so I interviewed Brian Fuller, who is the writer and the creator of the show last week. And I'm going to do a feature where he's kind of guided me through the season two finale. Mm-hmm. And anyone who's watched the show will realize why I've picked that particular episode and the zeroed in on the last 20 minutes, because I think it's some of the finest television I've ever seen. And I know I keep saying this in the office, and
I have to start watching it.
Inevitably, I'm going to build up expectations beyond all.
Is it suitable, like, train fodder? Or is it a bit too...
It's quite a dark show, so I don't know whether you'd be able to pick out a lot of the detail. Do you know what I mean? Like, on you might not be able to see certain things.
Right.
It's, I think, on a technical level, it's one of the best made TV shows. Like, cinematography, lighting, all that sort of stuff. It looks beautiful. Like, it looks like a David Fincher movie.
Right.
Performances are great. Mads Mikkelsen as Hannibal, and Lawrence Fishburne's great. Hugh Dancy, they're all great, really strong performances. But I think the script and the plotting is exceptional. I can't speak highly enough of it. I love it.
I will have to check it out.
I think it's too dark for me.
Okay.
So anyone with a weak stomach, you can't really watch.
I think I'll try it.
It's in context.
You know what I'm like.
It's weird. It's on NBC, I think, in America, which is a network channel. And then traditionally, anything that kind of pushed the envelope was cable, HBO and stuff. This is... I can't believe the stuff that they get away with in the show. Like, it's really right up there.
Is it gory?
Some things, but also implied? just what the... No,
it's not implied.
Some stuff isn't implied at all.
All right, fair enough.
But when they get to crime scenes, for instance... Some of the killers arrange their kill scenes in very elaborate and imaginative ways, which you usually watch it go, "Oh, blimey!"
So that's it. Like, that is the one problem with watching TV and film on
public transport.
Nothing worse. Like, I've been rewatching Band of Brothers, and when Tom Hardy is introduced, of course he's on top of a naked woman. But you're just sat there with a busy commuter train, going, "Yeah, that's the kind of thing that I watch."
Was he riding her?
Well,
like a car, like a Mercedes-Benz DLC.
Yes, he was just having intimate relations with a lady. What? Anyway,
Tom Hardy,
Andy from Germany, who streams us every week from Germany.
Nice, yeah. International.
Says the price point for the Oculus Rift was announced a couple of weeks ago, and it will be as cheap as possible. In brackets, quotes, not brackets, which translates to $200 to $400, I imagine. Morpheus will fall in line with a similar price point. Sounds expensive, especially as we inch nearer to $400 price points. I'm not sure what he means there, but I think he's saying it's more likely to be nearer $400 than it is $200. Yeah, anyway. With what is certain to be a very limited library to begin with, I wonder this is dooming VR in terms of gaming to failure. What can be done to increase the appeal of VR so it doesn't become a tech footnote not to be revisited for another 20 years? It's a hard one. We've spoken about it a lot. And have you played Morpheus or?
Yes, so I did The Deep, which is the one with the dark.
Right, and so that's the kind of, I guess, the best example of VR that I've certainly played and you played as well, Creep, didn't you?
Yeah, I think it's really immersive.
But it's a fairground ride in my eyes. It works. I could totally see myself going to Alton Towers or something like that.
Why Oculus and Morpheus perform really well at trade shows.
Yeah.
Because you queue up. Yeah. You queue up for 3 hours to have a go, and then you put it down and you go, "Oh, that was good."
Yeah.
But then transplant that into the home and... I don't know. Suddenly, I think it makes a lot less sense.
But even like, so I did a video of me playing The Deep, and when I was in that experience, it was like, this is amazing. You know what I didn't realize? There was the guy next to me, literally staring at me in the face. I didn't know he stared at me in the face, and I could literally be sat there in my home while somebody robs me of all of my belongings, and then take the headset off and go, "Oh, I've got nothing left." I just can't imagine doing it at home.
The best thing that I've ever played with it. So I was at Develop in Brighton, and it was trying to get Kickstarter funding, and it was called Radial G.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically, I'm a futuristic racer, and you're on the outside of these tubes, and you're meant to go through, there's green and red kind of checkpoints that are rotating. And if you go through green, you speed up, you go through red, you slow down. Mm-hmm. And it's a race, it's simple. And I played that, and I really got a sense of speed.
Yeah.
And I kept... Me being terrible at races, I kept aiming for the red ones to slow myself down and hitting the green ones, and before I knew where I was, I was shooting through. And it's really, that was one of the best things that I've kind of played on it. And I can see myself doing stuff like that. So a game like Wipeout, for example,
yeah,
that's incredible. That's kind
but of that's, to spend an additional $200, $400
that's
on a game like that, is like, really?
You need enough of those to justify it. And I don't quite know. But having said that, when we spoke to Andrew House and Mark Cerny, they were very keen to stress Morpheus is there's no guarantee Morpheus will ever hit shelves. What they're doing is they're trying to get feedback. In the same way with the PS4 in development, they put it out early to developers to get feedback and make the best product they could. Morpheus is just kind of going out to consumers and developers so they can get feedback about what they want from VR. And if it
Morpheus up, isn't a thing.
Yeah, exactly. And if it ends up becoming if it ends up becoming a consumer product, it'll be very different to what it is today.
Yeah.
And
it's a long way off.
There's no guarantee it will. You know, it's not a rival to Oculus in the current sense.
It's
know?
Not a thing, yeah.
So that's something else to kind of bear in mind.
There you go.
So it's me. So Sony devices and remote play. So we talked about the Xperia Z3, which has remote play features, which is Sony's new smartphones. And someone said that they don't agree with our analysis.
Who said this?
This is Joshua Pigott-Smith. Oh, Pigott-Smith, our friend. I think he's missing the fact that for someone like me who lives in a one-bedroom flat with my girlfriend, it saves him buying a Vita or buying a PS TV and bringing a second TV into a small bedroom. He doesn't game on the move anyway, so the main functionality he uses it for is literally just you know, convenience. So he thinks it's a good move by Sony.
Yeah, fair play. I think in the sense, yeah,
I thought
good.
We said that last week.
I thought so. Maybe I've badly expressed myself.
We said it's a good move, but I would like to see that technology on all platforms. I'd like to see it on iOS.
Yeah.
What I didn't realise as well, so I was writing a story this week about Sony's smartphone business is doing badly, so they downgrade it. But Xperia phones in America are only available on T-Mobile, which is the fourth largest provider.
Right.
So they're kind of already, like, it's a niche within a niche within a niche.
Yeah.
And so I think you're completely
right.
You're
not helping yourself, are you?
No, it's got a lot of potential if they just rolled it out.
Okay.
Right, next up is Andrew Vogue. Andrew Vogue, friend of the show. So this is in response to the superhero show, but I think it's better to discuss this here in the podcast. On the last episode of the superhero show, I laughed when Chris was showing me a moment from Kick-Ass. I kind of lost my stuff, and I nearly choked, and I laughed while he was explaining something very emotional to him while dressed as Kick-Ass. And Andrew wanted to know, is there any kind of movie or video game moment that would have been emotional or engaging for us, but was spoilt by the situation, environment, or just a sketchy bit of writing? So here's an example while you think on that, Alex and Luke. He says that at the end of The Dark Knight Rises, there's an emotional scene where Alfred weeps in front of the Wayne tombstones because he failed Thomas and Martha.
Yep.
I thought this was then undermined by the last scene where it turns out Bruce had been lying and emotionally torturing one his one true best friend.
Yep.
And then secondly, he said that the end of the original Ring film was Room for Him by his brother getting home from school. At that moment, I think we can all relate to this, going, who's that? Why is she coming out the TV? Her fingernails look pretty effed up. Oh, bloody hell. This has subtitles. I hate subtitles. What language is this even? Who's she? What's this? Why? And so on.
So that was going to be my similar thing. I would say pretty much every film ruined by my wife because she always wants to know the answer to something that hasn't been given yet.
Rather than it's yes. Yeah, I've had that before.
I don't know what that is
I've
yet,
had that before.
But I'm hoping they'll explain it.
I think they're withholding that intentionally.
Yes.
I've got a friend like that, and it's kind of a riff on that, who has his theories about it all. So he thinks he's figured it out, and he's like, I bet you that's happened. I bet you that one did that.
Yeah.
And you're just like, I don't care. I really don't care. Like,
please
shut up.
I love my mum. She's a remarkable woman.
Yes.
She raised me from a very young age by herself.
Well, that's good.
And,
I was going to say, she raised you
I love and respect her deeply. But you'll be watching a TV show with her or a film, very serious. She won't ask many questions, unlike your wife.
Yeah.
She'll wait till the very end, a climactic point, intuitively judged. And she'll go, was he in Emmerdale?
Was he?
Yeah, he was. Sure.
Well,
yeah.
It's like I said.
Heartbeat.
It's like I said, like Guardians of the Galaxy. Part of me was feeling her want to say, what's going on?
Just look at the beginning. Just keep looking at you.
And all I was doing is like, I'm trying not to focus on the person to my left.
Is that when the person with you keeps going?
Yeah.
Just keeps looking at you and you're like, I'm watching this. Why are you watching me?
It was the same with Inception. It's like, oh my gosh.
Oh, I saw that with my mum. She fell asleep for that film. Doesn't get more lucid if you take a nap for an hour.
No, sure.
My flatmate. We're not necessarily into the same movies. He doesn't really like the superhero thing. And so when we went to see Kick-Ass 2, which I was really excited for, and you can just feel, you can just feel next to you that someone's not enjoying it.
Yeah, sequel's tricky as well, isn't it?
And you're trying to get into it and like be really immersed, and they're just like...
Yeah.
And you know, and you just
need to pay more attention.
Yeah, and it really kind of impacts on your enjoyment. So yeah, that's...
Email from Dave. As I've grown older, there is something that I've completely fallen out of love with, and it's open world games. I'll never get over some of the first open world games I played, especially GTA 3, where I could spend hours running around bludgeoning people with my baseball bat. I enjoyed Fallout 3, but didn't get satisfaction. God, I can't speak today, sorry. If I found a new area with no legitimate side quests. I have GTA 5, and it's a game I deeply respect for what it offers and its execution. Of the minor things, I just don't want to explore it whenever I hear this, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so no. Now I find that strange because I actually think that is GTA 5's strongest point, is the world and the ability just to hang out and do stuff, because that world is beautiful.
So I have a controversial theory.
Yeah.
Okay, which isn't that controversial, but basically I play a lot of MMOs, which are usually open world.
Mm-hmm.
Infamous was open world, and I thought it was a good game, but it kind of bored me a bit. Mm-hmm. My theory is, one of the reasons, and you look at the Assassin's franchise, which again is very open world.
Get your point.
All the big franchises and stuff.
You're building up now.
Yes. One of my theories is, one of the reasons that The Last of Us is so successful is because it does offer a very linear, story-driven experience that takes you from point A to point B.
Yeah.
And that's it.
But that's because
not controversial.
But it was... built from the game, from the ground up, to be like
it's
that.
It's a narrative game.
It is, but I don't just mean it in that way. I mean, it was also so well received because there is just... we've almost reached saturation point with open world games in the market.
I disagree. I just think it's one pillar of gaming.
Mm.
There's lots of narrative-driven games, like Uncharted, for instance. Yeah. There are other narrative-driven games beyond Heavy Rain.
See, I think...
There are lots of open world games, and a lot of big budget games
tend to be open world
because they require a big budget, so they're quite prominent.
I know we don't always agree with our readers here, but like Arkham City was a good example of where I actually think that shouldn't have been an open world game. It didn't need to be an open world game.
Well, it's a narrative driven game.
In
a slightly expanded world,
exactly.
It's not a fully open world, and there's no impetus to explore that world.
And that's why I never did disconnect there. And that's why I think we see it all the time. Is obviously VR is a buzzword, but open world was a buzzword a couple of years ago, and how a lot of people are just adopting it it has to be like that.
I think there's another thing to distinguish here, because you can have an open world game and still have quite a strong narrative propelling you through it. Like Far Cry 3.
Yeah.
There's a strong storyline there kicking you through that game.
God, that game was good.
But then there's another type of open world game where they want to give you freedom.
Yeah.
They want you to do things whenever you want, and emergent and that sort of stuff. That's a poor place to locate a narrative.
Because
then you'll never know what part of the map you're going to be in and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah. Thank you, Dave.
Cool. And then the final piece of feedback we have is from Cameron McCulloch, who says London's big gaming trade show EGX is just around the corner, and will we be covering the show? If so, will we have any presents there if people want to come and say hello?
What actual presents to give out?
Yeah.
No presents, unfortunately. You're going to be there.
I am going to be there. I'm going to be there on the Thursday. I'm going to be there on the Friday, though I've got back-to-back interviews, and I will be there for some of the Sunday.
Are you taking any interviews?
I'm taking any interviews, yeah. You're down for a bit, aren't you, as well?
I'll be down at the weekend, I think.
Yeah. Hey.
Checking it out.
I'm not going.
I've never been before.
Have you not?
No. I've just
I went a couple of years
things
ago.
Things have always come
It's a fantastic consumer show.
Mm.
But in terms of, we're in the fortunate position where we get to see a lot of stuff early.
Yeah, so most of the builds and games are stuff that we played either at Gamescom or we played at E3. So I'm kind of going to go mainly just to talk to developers.
Yeah.
But that's the draw for me.
You ask him, you go, hi.
Hi.
What's your favourite resolution?
What's
a classic commanding question.
What's
I'm
your
to get, permission to run here.
What's your New Year's resolution? So Do a feature on that.
4K.
UHD.
That's
that.
What
is that hormone replacement?
That as a tweet, I'm going to use that.
They put that in milk. We're not doing the email where somebody said I was inconsistent.
That's because we're inconsistent. We were going to do it, now we're not. Because we're inconsistent.
The inconsistency one?
About something I said last week.
It was about the iPhone and the battery.
Yeah.
Do you want to defend yourself?
I do a bit, because I do think I probably did myself no favour. So I think the email was from Jamie Martin.
So this is the second time.
Well, no, Jamie runs the IGN UK podcast group on Facebook. And he said that last week I was inconsistent because I said that using fetch data on your mobile phone over 4G punishes battery life. And I said, that's why your battery life doesn't last so long on your iPhone, Alex. Yep. But then I said,
the
iWatch wouldn't drain your battery because
it's pushing
data. Yeah. So this, I've probably done myself no favors by saying push notifications in both sense.
Yeah.
But getting fetch data on your mobile phone all day, drawing email, connecting to 4G is the biggest way you can drain your battery life. What I meant between the phone and the watch is a Bluetooth connection, which is Bluetooth 4.0, which is super low powered. And also it requires no fetching of data because it'll be like pushing a calendar invite.
Why didn't you say that?
Because you know what? Brevity.
I just think fair play to the people calling you out week in, week out.
Oh my God. Can we not invite any more of them? Because
you've got a review going up soon.
So if you want to pick us up on anything we said in today's podcast, IGN_UKfeedback@IGN.com or contact Alex at AlexIGNUK on Twitter.
Yes.
Or Luke.
At Luke Carmarley on Twitter.
Or myself at Krupa. So yeah, if you could just bother us over the weekend on everything that we said that is factually inaccurate,
also,
be fantastic.
We did give out about 4 different email addresses, so it's probably the best way to do it.
Krupa got it right. Yeah. For once, Krupa got it right.
Yeah. Well, at least Bear Park is in the air with his podcast ruining ways. You may never see this, we don't know.
Let's talk about the games and films out this week. First up, Daniel Krupa, Justify Yourself, the Disney Infinity 2.0.
Yes, so the review will be up by the time this podcast goes out. Yep. I gave it 6.8, saying it's an okay game. I look back on it, I gave Disney Infinity, which came out a year ago, one of the highest scores out there, actually. I was kind of right up at the higher end of the range, and I loved it. I thought it was a great way to introduce kids to a variety of different types of games. You've got three sets, Pirates, Monsters, and Incredibles, and each one was slightly different. It was rich. Toy Box Mode was great. Disney Infinity 2.0 adds Marvel superheroes.
Yeah.
And you get one set, you get the Avengers, which, you know, it doesn't teach kids anything about games, except you're doomed for a life of fetch quests and button mashing.
Yeah.
Which isn't great, and it doesn't look that nice.
No, so you were playing on PlayStation 4.
It's a bit ropey in
and
places.
Every time I kind of came over and took a look at it, I was just a bit kind of staggered by how, like, well, Manhattan, it's
set. It doesn't feel like Marvel's Manhattan.
Empty.
It feels barren.
Yeah.
And if you've played Marvel Lego superheroes, like, it's night and day. You go around Marvel Lego Manhattan, and there's loads of stuff to do. There's loads of Easter eggs. Stan Lee's hanging off the side of a building. You need to save him.
Yeah.
There's loads of stuff. There's loads of fan service. This feels really empty.
Yeah.
If you're playing as Black Widow and you can't fly, you're just walking around the city with nothing to see. On the flip side, the toy box mode is really good. There's a lot of fun in there, and they've made it easy to create stuff. So if you're not the most creative or feel a little overwhelmed by it all, you can just chuck down some helpers and they'll build you a treehouse or a racetrack. And that's still where it's best, because you can have Mike Wazowski and Thor riding horses shooting toilet paper guns. You know, that's weird. And
but it is, like, obviously the thing that piqued my interest about the original game was that each of the sets felt unique to the characters that were within it.
The thing about what it boiled down to for me was, in the Monster set last year, you walked around campus and there was this machine that looked like a photo booth, and you go in there and you can make a monster. You could choose its fangs, how many eyes it had, what colour it was. And then when you exited it, it would spit out this monster, which would then just walk around campus.
Yeah.
There was no reason for that to exist other than it was quite fun to make a monster.
Yeah.
There is nothing like that in the Avengers set.
Right.
There's none of that detail or time just to make something fun.
Yeah.
It's just empty.
And that's, you know, I think we were talking about while you were playing it, is that to have that ambition and scope with the original game is huge.
To sustain it a year on as well, to do, like,
So, oh well.
Yes. Still good. There's still good stuff in it.
Also out this week, Hyrule Warriors.
Hyrule Warriors.
Yeah, it's good.
Apparently good, yeah. Apparently Zelda fans, there's lots of fan service in it, which is good. You know, if you like the Dynasty Warriors gameplay, it doesn't really riff too much on that.
It's not the Zelda game I would like.
I think it's, you know, it's a stopgap. I mean, lots of people... I quite like Dynasty Warriors gameplay, but I find the character... There's no characters that I can latch onto. I'm like, I forget their names every 5 minutes. Mm. So the idea of maybe having some Zelda characters in it, that it does... appeal to me, and it's meant to be fun, but you know, I don't think there's much depth.
Oh. There you go. How do you pronounce this?
Theatre Rhythm Final Fantasy Curtain Call.
That's a hell of a name.
I know. So it's the sequel to Theatre Rhythm Final Fantasy, and it's basically a rhythm action game on your 3DS. So you tap along to songs, famous songs from the Final Fantasy series.
Yep.
Yeah, again, good. Like, lots of songs, 210. If you're not a Final Fantasy fan, I think you are going to struggle just because... You know,
are they all from Final Fantasy?
Yeah.
It's not Anaconda by Nicki Minaj.
Sadly not. Yeah, Ubisoft snapped up the rights for Just Dance. But yeah, so it's all right. And there's some quite cute versions of characters in the series.
Have they really? Is that in Just Dance, Anaconda? Do you have to shake your butt?
I think I might be thinking of...
They should add
Bang
it.
Bang by Jessie J. Doesn't stop, different song. But yes.
I have no idea what you're talking about. You young hipsters.
We were talking about Ariana Grande this morning.
I didn't know who that was.
I don't know who that is either.
Yeah, I need to talk to Kilby about
that. I thought she was from ancient mythology.
Also out, Wasteland 2 and my personal favourite, Train Simulator 2. I cannot wait to recreate the 759 from Berkhamsted to Euston.
There you go.
That is going to be hella exciting. Movies.
Hella.
Hella. Yeah.
Right, what do you want to know about? Riot Club?
Yep.
The Riot Club is a film based on a play, which is a kind of a satire of the Bullending Club, which, if you don't know, is a kind of society in Oxford, which many famous British politicians were members of, and they used to go around doing rather unsavoury things like trashing restaurants and generally being idiots.
Right.
I kind of reined it in a bit.
Yeah.
It's going to drop a C-bomb. And the Riot Club is kind of a satire on that, but also apparently later on it gets quite dark. I haven't seen it, but I'm going by the review that we've got on site. Apparently later on it takes a dark turn,
right?
And there's almost elements of horror in there as well, like quite a grim conclusion, I think.
Okay.
So apparently it's an interesting movie, and we gave it a 7.4 saying it's a very good movie. Great acting, a lot of young British actors in there who deliver very good performances.
Okay.
So that's it. And then what else do you want to know
about?
Walk Among the Tombstones is the latest in the genre of Liam Neeson being a bit of a badass. We're a long way from Oscar Schindler, people. It's him kind of in Taken mode, but he's a private detective. I think he uses his brain a little bit more than his brawn.
Bless him, that's nice.
Yeah, so he's maybe taking a break. Those Taken films have done murder to his back. So we said it was okay. We said that... Liam Neeson's like really good at those kind of roles. He's kind of growing into them.
Done them enough.
Well, has he won an Oscar, Liam Neeson?
For Schindler.
What,
right?
Recently?
Did he?
He must have won it for Schindler.
I don't know.
Star Wars Episode 1. Joking.
I can't imagine he would have won an Oscar for Taken or anything like that.
So
the best gravelly voice.
While
we
said while he continues to excel in those kind of roles, like reinventing himself, yeah. The story's pretty predictable, and we gave it a 6.7, saying it's okay.
Yep. Last up, Wish I Was Here.
Oh, Wish I Was Here, right. I'm going to show you the poster for Wish I Was Here. And this will probably tell you everything you need to know about this film. So from this is a comedy drama from Zach Braff,
right,
of Scrubs and Garden State fame.
Yeah,
it looks like every other kind of indie self-exploratory comedy that you've ever seen.
Life is an occasion. Rise to it.
Yeah, so we haven't got a review on site. It's also got Kate Hudson in it, Ashley Green and Josh Gad. Review's been pretty bad so far.
Josh Gad, is he?
He's the Olaf.
Olaf, yeah.
He is indeed. So on Rotten Tomatoes, we don't have a review yet, but on Rotten Tomatoes, it has got 42%.
Whoops.
So
if you're going to go see one film, be
Riot Club. The Riot Club, yeah, go see that. Go see the Toffs in action.
And if you're going to play one game, probably Hyrule Warriors, I would have thought.
Yes.
Some people have been ranting about Wasteland 2 like it's the answer to something.
Yeah. Well, it's got a long history.
It's the answer to, when's Wasteland 2 out? When can I play Wasteland 2?
Right now. That's it for this week's podcast. We want to give a special shout out to our duck hunters, don't we?
Yes, Jamie Martin and the lovely, lovely admins. Let me just get up the page so I can direct people to the right
get up the page.
Spot. Oh, you sprung this on me.
While Daniel's using Facebook, it's podcast episode 250 in 4 weeks' time. I'm hoping to bring news of that there podcast next week. Yeah. We are working to make it as special as possible. A few determining factors there, but hopefully, yeah, more news this time next week.
Cool. Yeah, so what I wanted to say was the podcast fan page. I don't like using the word fan, but the community page for the IGN UK podcast set up by Jamie Martin is now on 321 members.
Hurrah.
And I want to say thank you to Jamie himself and also Kevin Tarn and Scott Sedman, who are the admins, and everyone who's liked it.
You guys are doing an amazing job, so thank you so much.
So yeah, and I think we're going to start using it to like test out, like sound out people for ideas for the podcast and future episodes and stuff like that. So if you want to have a say on where the podcast goes post 250,
well, I think we're all
join the
there.
Group.
There's also some really good artwork as well, better than anything we could knock up.
Yeah,
so there you go.
Terrible at Photoshop.
There you go.
And it's my birthday next Wednesday. I just thought I'd drop that in there.
Brilliant. Okay. Thanks very much. And if you want to send, I don't know, maybe a shit sandwich to Luke for his birthday, you can do that until this time next week. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.